Round one of the NFL draft is over, and you got to talk about the fantasy football reactions. Some very exciting things, some things that I think we got right back in January. First, talking about previews. Now we get to see them come to fruition here, and we're going to take a review. We're going to look at the NFL round one and talk about the fantasy implications of it all. And let's start with a man at number one. You guys know I'm a big fan of Caleb Williams. And yesterday, talked about this immediately on the Ship Chasing stream. If you didn't watch that one, I'm not sure about the rewatchability of an NFL draft stream where the picks were flying slow and leisurely. But definitely was a fun video to be a part of, fun stream to be a part of, hanging out again with Pat, with Pete, with Gretch, and later Leone. So I was glad to be on that one. And Caleb Williams, as I talked about yesterday, I just sad, happy to see him in the league. I think he's happy to see him too in a situation that he's getting all the weapons. They draft Romo Dunze at pick 9 as well. So Caleb Williams coming in with DJ Moore, coming in with Keenan Allen, coming in with DeAndre Swift, with Romo Dunze. Hopefully some better offensive line support as well, though. That's the one spot I feel like the Bears have maybe not addressed enough, though. A lot of depth at offensive line is one of the things people say about this draft, so we'll see what they do later on. For Caleb, though, he's getting all the position to come in, succeed immediately. I think a better runway than C.J. Stroud has, where, as you guys have talked about, I've talked a lot with you guys about how I feel about Houston, where I think Nico Collins, I think Tank Dell, I think Robert Woods, those guys were all made, Noah Brown more than Robert Woods, obviously, were made by C.J. Stroud next year. Those guys weren't on the independently going to be sure thing massive successes. Nico had 2 years of being mid at best, I would say. So for Houston, like, they gave weapons to C.J. Stroud. He got it done. Caleb has legit weapons. Caleb is coming in with some of the best weapons of any rookie QB has ever had. So I think for Caleb, he's in position to succeed. Fantasy-wise, where does he go now? I think he probably comes up from pick 100-ish. If I had to guess, he's going more in the 80s and 90s. I'm willing to pay that price tag because I believe a lot in the Chicago offense, what they're going to be able to do with Caleb at the helm. As we've talked about as well, Caleb, more of a runner, people realize. Definitely a guy who can take some touchdowns away in the red zone as well, though not going to be his primary value. Of course, his primary value is going to be racking up passing yards and creating value for the stack. But I think, look, coaching aside, whatever we'll see from Chicago with the new offensive coordinators there, what happens on that side, I don't know. But in terms of talent, in terms of a guy getting the landing spot, like, Caleb has gotten it all. And I think he's a guy, too, where I admire him running to the beat of his own drum, marching to the beat of his own drum. I suppose you don't run to the beat of a drum. The point being, any people that are weird about that, too, I want to see him put it in their face. Like, I really want to see him show out in a major way. And I'm happy with the landing spot. Happy the weapons around him. Caleb, to me, a deserving number one pick. Check the chat, too. Swift, highest fantasy score on the Bears this year? I don't think so. I mean, it's tough to say because obviously the wide receiver depth chart is going to be carved up a little bit. But I think they're going to be running a lot of three wide receiver sets, one tight end. The tough part is they did sign Gerald Everett, so it's hard to imagine why you signed Gerald Everett. You're not going to put him out there that much. So maybe you're seeing a little bit of a mix of three wide receiver sets with 12 personnel where you get two tight ends on the field. But I think for the most part, like, these guys are running a lot of routes. And I would say, I would think the pass rate has to increase. Like, the pass rate of expectation has to increase substantially. So that would be the hope and the assumption, I think, for that team. Ricky P getting such high praise from all the players. Yeah, Ricky Pearsall going. We'll talk about him in a little bit, but definitely a surprise at the end of the first round, and one that is certainly going to affect the ADPs in Best Ball Mania coming up. And it does seem like, guys, Best Ball Mania going to come out tomorrow. So I don't believe, if it comes out at night, I won't be able to do a stream. If it came out in the morning, I would. So that's how it's looking for me tomorrow. But I would expect, no matter what, a Monday morning, even though we're probably going to go and head against the Pete Overs at Juggernaut on Monday, we will be doing our first Best Ball Mania stream likely on Monday. But if it gets earlier, hit the notification bell. You'll know if I do. All right, Jaden Daniels, he goes to the spot where I had dialed this in from January. I think really the biggest early pick that I got right was Bo Nix to Denver. And I fortunately did not dial up that advantage in the big board very much. For Jaden Daniels, you guys know, I have a ton of Jaden Daniels with Commanders, a ton of Jaden Daniels with Terry McLaurin, a ton of Jaden Daniels with Jahan Dotson, I guess more than I should, more than I realized I had throughout the course of that process. A lot of Jaden Daniels with Zach Ertz, actually the most common duo I had was Jaden and Brian Robinson. So that was a bet if you've been watching Splash Play. Hopefully you made that bet too, because I do think it is a pretty good one. But for Jaden overall in the situation, coming into Washington, he's not getting the best offensive coordinator, I don't think, in Cliff Kingsbury. I think he's getting a guy that, you know, didn't get in Caleb Williams' way necessarily in his, how he played at USC last year, didn't get in Kyler's way necessarily, how he played in Arizona, at least in terms of fantasy. So I think for Jaden, that's going to be the hope here. And my main hope is that Jaden, being such an accurate passer, being such a good runner, obviously getting the draft capital as well now, where whatever concerns people had for him early on in the draft process, where they thought he might not go at number two, he was definitely locked in at number two for basically the last few months. So for Jaden, I think for him, Could there be better landing spots? Maybe, but you have a speedy receiver. You have an underneath guy in Dotson. You have a veteran tight end in Zach Ertz. We'll see what else they add in the draft. I think they're very live to add a Ladd McConkey type. And I think that'd be a tremendous fit for him, even though his skill set may be a little bit duplicative of Dotson. But to me, his biggest value would be that he doesn't upset Terry McLaurin very much. But they could add, you know, somebody else interesting at wide receiver. I don't know who that would be. Maybe a Brendan Rice. Would that be very fun for my bags? For Jaden, though, good outcome for him. Happy to see him go number two. And as I said, planted the flag on enough pieces of content. For me, Jaden Daniels is going to be the fantasy QB1 out of these rookies. And I do think that he has a shot to be a top 3 to 5 QB this year. I think he's legitimately got a shot to be top three. And people are going to be blown away by that. And you shouldn't be, because I've told you about it enough times. All right, we got Drake May at number three. Drake May. So my bet was that Drake May was going to go at number three, but I did think the Patriots were live to trade out of the spot. To me, them being a more of a JJ McCarthy team makes sense. I think with Drake May, though, one thing that people are missing a little bit, and I do think Pat Crane talked about a little bit on the stream we did yesterday on ship chasing. Drake May is going with Alex Van Pelt, the offensive coordinator. Alex Van Pelt, when he did at Cleveland, he really did a good job adapting to his QBs, where he did have a deep ball thrower, a pocket passer, and Joe Flacco. You know what he did? He let him sit back there. He set up deep routes for him, and he took advantage of it. I think that's a good thing here. I think for New England, people are going to carry the priors of, oh, the Patriots, the Belichick Patriots. And I still think this is going to be a team that's going to want to run the ball, going to want to play defense. Like, I think they're going to be Brownsy in that same way as well. And Patriotsy in that same way too. But I think they are going to allow Drake May to uncork things. The running, I'm concerned about a little bit because, you know, Deshaun Watson, we did not see run a ton last year. Let me actually confirm that that's correct. I have my NBA data to look up. Deshaun ran. Oh, come on. Why is he not here? I think Deshaun ran like 4 or 5 times a game. Somebody might be able to tell me in the chat. I can't find it. For some reason, my Excel is not. Is it searching by formula? These things drive me nuts when they happen. All right, we're looking at formulas. Look at the values here. We'll find fucking Deshaun. God forbid I give out a data point and I don't show you the entire data point. All right, Deshaun ran 4.3 times a game last year. So not running a lot is really the main point there. So if Drake May is not going to be forced to run, that's my concern, because he did stop running or ran less this past year than he did the year before last. As I've mentioned on streams, I think that could be a little bit of a business decision for him as a guy where you're coming in, you know, you have high draft capital coming your way, maybe risk your body a little bit less. There was also the shift in UNC's offense. That could be a part of it. But I think if he doesn't run a lot, you're losing a big part of what the value is for fantasy, because he's not going to be an accurate thrower. As I mentioned, both on the stream yesterday on ship chasing, as well as many times here on stream with you guys, Drake May's accuracy is really a big question mark to me, where he had a 77% catchable ball rate, which doesn't sound bad, but then you compare it to Bo Nix at 88%, McCarthy at 86%, Jaden Daniels at 85%. Caleb Williams, closer to Drake May than you'd want to see as well, but he's still at 79%. The on-target rate, though, is really the worrisome one, where 61% on-target rate for him, rounding up, compared to 74% for Jaden, 73% for McCarthy, 77% for Nix, and 67% for Caleb. So he's not an accurate guy, and if he doesn't run, you're just hoping that he's going to throw a lot of deep yards, get those prayer yards, and convert him. So I think for Drake May, that's my main concern. But still, I think people are going to be down enough on New England being a landing spot. They're not going to treat it like a new situation, even though it is completely a new situation, one that might actually be good, because that defense is probably not going to be great either. So he's got to be in some good game scripts. I think Drake May is perfectly fine at number three, and really, that's the main thing to me. AR or Daniels? Tough. I think that AR, the raw physical tools, excited me a little bit more. For Jaden, though, he's so polished analytically that I would think it would be Jaden. I think it would be Jaden Daniels for me. I think the coaching is the one gap where I, like you guys know from last year, I was deeply in the bag for Shane Steichen. I think he's a genius. He was the one part I enjoyed out of watching the Eagles the season before last. So for me, for Shane Steichen, I think that was a big part of it. I don't have the same faith in Washington's coaching staff. I think Cliff Kingsbury is a fake sharp. I think that Quinn is just going to be happy to run the ball incessantly. And maybe that does bode well for the RPO for Jaden Daniels and his own ability to run. But, you know, I think those are the main things for me. I still would probably take Jaden just because of the ability to pass accurately and, you know, successfully. And then, frankly, too, the way that he plays, like there's a clip that was floating around from this past weekend of CJ Stroud talking to Micah Parsons about, you know, basically like what they would do in a certain play situation, a 4th-and-3, and they build their perfect team. And then CJ Stroud draws up a play and they approach how it would go. And basically, like Stroud, the way he talks about it is like, he's setting up, he wants to get those 3 yards to get the first down, but he's also looking downfield to try to set up a touchdown. And I do think for Jayden Daniels, he's kind of a similar player where his eyes, frankly, he and Caleb both, eyes always downfield, guys trying to set up touchdowns. For Drake May, I see that a little bit less. So I think those guys, no matter what, are in good situations. And AR just doesn't have that same passing ability, unfortunately, even though I love the guy. Surprising number of Caleb and Odunze stacks. There you go. I think it's a good play. I think that Odunze is going to come down. People are going to worry a lot about him being priced out of the starting two wide receiver spots. But ultimately, a team like this where you have Caleb, and frankly, how he played best at USC, you want to spread it out. You want to give him the opportunity to find different guys. You want to also give him some ability to move around and create value. So Odunze, to me, if he comes down at all in ADP, and I think he might, I think that more Keaton Allen and Odunze should all probably come down a little bit in terms of how the public perceives them. I'll be there. I think Caleb comes up and those three guys come down, which is going to be kind of a weird push-pull to have. Shout out Bittles, by the way, shout out all of our regulars. Good seeing a lot of you guys on the stream last night on the Ship Chasing channel. And of course, new streams here coming up. Draft season begins again on Monday to Friday, every day at 11 a.m. We took a little bit of a respite here. Just talked about our hot takes. And now we're talking about round one reactions. But that is basically how it's going to go for the rest of the summer. And we'll see what other fun we have along the way, including our guest host next week. Got to book Adam, I think. Adam, if you're listening, let's try to do Thursday, but I'll DM you at some point. All right, Marvin Harrison, number four. So this is the one thing I deviated from in my mock draft that I thought was a sharp play in terms of just trying to get different from the field, trying to be contrarian. Marvin Harrison, though, go number four, not Malik Nabers. I realized to me what I was really doing with some of my picks in that mock draft. I was wish casting things that I just like for players that I like. To me, I don't love the Giants situation for Malik Nabers. I don't love the QB play. I don't love that they have a full depth chart of guys that deserve some routes, even though they're not as good as Malik Nabers. For Arizona, though, you're coming into a situation for Harrison where he's got to beat nobody. He's got to beat like literally nobody to get targets. I know people love Trey McBride, but in reality, like Harrison being a boundary receiver who gets open against every kind of coverage, who's just like a beautiful route runner as well, who gets the ball downfield and does a good job catching it there as well. Like Harrison does everything you need out of a receiver. So he's now in the perfect spot. I think in terms of his ADP, I think he could push towards the 1-2 turn. I think at a certain point, rational heads may prevail, especially from the people who've not been drafting or the big board season, where there's a lot of rookie excitement in the big board. I think people coming in are going to go, oh, rookie in the first round? Bleh. Rookie wide receiver, especially? Bleh. So I think that keeps him closer to the round two. But if I had to guess, I mean, I think he should flip Garrett Wilson, but I think Garrett Wilson should be closer to the mid-second round anyway. But I think that's, to me, where he can end up potentially. But I would say closer, my better bet would be second round. You could barely hear over my tears, Bowers, Las Vegas. Yeah. I mean, the hope for them would be that they're just going to run Davante Adams, Jacoby Myers, and then Mayer and Bowers together. But definitely a tough one there. I mean, you're getting two of the best tight end prospects in the last 10 years. So in that respect, I don't hate it. And you're definitely zigging when people seem to be zagging in the NFL, where the NFL obviously has a lot of top teams with top tight ends. Like we saw that enough times in the Super Bowl. But I think that in general, tight end draft capital has been a thing that people have pushed back on. It's like taking that tight end early. So I don't mind what the Raiders are doing. It's just, how are they going to use these guys? And is it going to mean that like Bowers is kneecapping Mayer, or Mayer is maybe going to impede the growth of Bowers? I hope it's more than just going to get creative with that offense. And really, as a team that wants to run the ball too, I think it can make sense. Like, I think they can just have both guys out there, and you have your two, stud receivers. You mix in maybe a Trey Tucker sometimes, but and then one of the tight ends has to come off the field. But that would be my hope, as you see a lot of 12 personnel and trying to run block and set up some shorter routes. And you know what? With Minshew, like, if Minshew's going to be the starter there, at least to start the year, he's going to look for a tight end. So I think that's a fine one. Joe Walt, another thing that we've been calling for weeks now. Everybody else, I think, really wanted to see Chargers get a receiver here. The quote from Harbaugh is that they're happy to see what Josh Palmer, what Quentin Johnston. He listed, I think, Davis was the other guy he listed, and then Simi Fehoko. He wanted to see what those four can do as a group. It didn't feel like they had to take a receiver. He's talked enough. Jim Harbaugh's talked about, wanting offensive linemen, thinking that they are a weapon, much like a skill position player is. The commitment was here. I think people thought it might have been a smokescreen or misdirection, but in fact, it is just boomer football for the Chargers. You have to feel good about the Chargers' run game, I would think, here, and how it's going to be impacted by a firm commitment to taking offensive line. Joe Alt, best lineman in the draft, so 6'9", 321, dude. By the way, Jesus fucking... offensive linemen, man, are monsters. They are sumo wrestlers, too. The two body types that you just don't want to be forced into, but you have to for your careers. All right, we got Malik Nabers here, pick six. So as I mentioned here, I just don't love the fit for the Giants. I think stepping into bad QB play, stepping into a team as well that would love to run the ball, doesn't want to be a high pass rate or expectation team. And also you're stepping into a team where you have Wandale Robinson, who does some similar things. He's only out of the slot. You can leave, move Malik Nabers around. He's pretty good out wide, still very good in the slot too. But you have Nabers there competing now with Wandale. Jalin Hyatt's going to take some of those go routes and those deep routes. They have to see what they have out of him in year two. So he's the other one there. Slayton is holding out right now. Slayton was actually pretty good last year. So you have three receivers that are pretty good. Darren Waller, I don't know if he comes back or not. I still think he comes back because you're coming off a divorce. I don't know why you would, like, you play football, you're coming off a divorce, go have some fun on the road. So I think Waller comes back, but you know, it's a lot of mouths there to feed in an offense that I don't think is going to be aggressive feeding pass catcher mouths. So that's really the big reason I don't love this spot for Nabers. Somebody that is a big Nabers bag holder, I'll still be there. Still think the talent is huge, but really it's not like an open target tree. They have to develop these young guys that have shown something, and both Hyatt and Wandale have shown something. So I don't know. And the QB play just sucks. Like, I don't think Daniel Jones is going to make a big leap to being competitive again. Maybe he has a reinvention after losing the ACL. You know, maybe that keeps him in the pocket more. And he really has been prepping this entire offseason to be more willing thrower, to get the ball out with some snap and to make some decisive plays and be accurate. But I don't know what we've seen in the past from him that's going to make you think that's the expectation. So that's a concern for Nabers here. Love him, but really wish it were a better outcome for sure. Other picks here. See, J.C. Latham, whatever. I mean, not a surprise here. Again, the Titans want to run the football. They also want to pass the football more. That is easier accomplished when you have better offensive line play. Latham was getting steamed up a lot in the mock drafts. People were talking him up in the media as well. The big one here, the man in the thumbnail, Michael Penix Jr. This trade, I mean, this lack of a trade, this pick, just an awful decision in every possible way. You know, in terms of managing NFL draft capital, number one is you could have gotten Penix later. I think they were concerned about the Broncos and Raiders in that spot and that one of them would take Penix. I think that's kind of a fool's errand. Maybe one of those teams would, but I think the Broncos were locked into Knicks, and I think maybe the Raiders would have taken Penix. But my assumption is that they couldn't trade then to 10 or 11, so they were worried about not getting Penix there. I don't know what you're getting with Penix that you're missing out on, really. Like, to me, an older QB, he looks cool. I got to say, he looked cool in the room waiting for his pick, even though apparently he was very surprised to be hearing about it. Said he threw the ball really well in the Falcons workout. Maybe that decided for them a little bit as well. For Penix, though, coming off the knee injuries, an older QB, I think he's 24. So for Penix, that's not great either. The fact that you just paid Kirk Cousins all this money. And yeah, I get hedging against Kirk Cousins having an injury, but this is a guy, this isn't drafting JJ McCarthy, who, you know, at 2021, you can keep him on the bench for a couple of years, even though he's probably ready to play day one. And I think he's going to crush in Minnesota, as we'll talk about in a moment. You take JJ McCarthy, like, you take the developmental QB then, and you let him play behind Kirk Cousins. And now you've pissed off Kirk Cousins, who already has put out to the media that he's frustrated and confused by them taking a QB here. So bad organizational stuff by the Falcons. The Falcons, too, are a team that's run by a tribunal. It's not like one person making decisions there, which is what they talked about. The Belichick hiring, there's an in-depth article on the ESPN report about Belichick and why he didn't get any jobs. They talk about that at length. So this was not just one person either making a bad decision. It's a group of people making a bad decision. So that's what horrifies me here. That said, Penix in the best situation to hit, so that's good for him, I guess. He's not going to play this year. You know, the worst-case outcome is him playing this year. So I think that's a thing for me where I would have a hard time drafting Kirk at ADP right now. I don't think Penix is draftable at all. I think he's a pure handcuff. If you got Kirk hurt in July, then maybe you're starting to take Penix for a BBM. But I think Penix to me is one of the worst picks in the top 10. This is the exact opposite, by the way, of a Lions situation where people compare it. Take Jahmyr Gibbs. You're taking a guy who's going to be on the field adding value to your team right away, unless they're going to be playing XFL style where two guys can throw a pass and reinventing the game. There's no reason to have Penix now. It's a huge waste of draft capital. Really bad football, really bad decision. Whatever you think about Penix, guys who like Penix, good news. You probably got his best possible outcome to succeed at age 27, but you know, like it's stupid. It's really one of the worst ones. Low IQ in Atlanta. Yeah. Typical Falcons. 2 years guaranteed for Cousins. There we go. So that's the whole thing. Hilarious move by all accounts, but yeah, Cousins only has 2 years guaranteed, essentially. That's the point, though, is like in 2 years, we don't know who's going to be at QB. Like, there could be somebody a million times better than Michael Penix. Next year, his class, people don't like very much, but even then, somebody can break out. That's a thing that happens enough. So I don't know. I don't get it. I don't get why you do it. I think it's a really big failing as an organization. And as I think, you know, Pete and the guys yesterday on the Ship Chasing Cast did a really good job just pointing out, like, just not getting some more picks out of that is really a big screw up. But I think they were afraid one of these teams in here in Seattle too, you know, maybe could have moved up and done something because they're in the range here where they could have perhaps jumped up to 10 or 11. So I think that was really it for them, is they just were worried about not getting Penix, even though nobody didn't seem like anybody really wanted Penix besides maybe the Raiders. Romo Dunze. People are going to hate this landing spot. Again, Caleb wanted him specifically. It's a very much a CJ Stroud, Tank Dell kind of situation. For Romo Dunze, I think this is a good landing spot for him. He's going to learn how to be better at the technique stuff that, frankly, he's not a burner athlete. Like, he's a very good athlete, but he's not like the stud player. He's significantly behind Marvin Harrison Jr. and Malik Nabers in terms of both production and the pure, you know, what they bring to the table in terms of like separation from Harrison, the east-west ability that Malik Nabers has. Romo Dunze doesn't have that. So he's got to win on technique. So if you're going to be in a wide receiver core with Keenan Allen and DJ Moore, and those guys are going to be, you know, good teammates, he's going to learn a lot. So I think for his career, very good outcome. Obviously, you have Keenan getting older, DJ Moore. DJ Moore's got to be a little bit older, right? I think we're talking 28, 29, 27, just turned 27, April 14th. A little bit younger than I would have thought. Would have thought he would be in range to turn 28. But DJ Moore getting a little bit older. So like long-term prospects for Dynasty, I think Odunze looks good. I'm not like Mr. Dynasty here, but he's going to be in a good situation. He's going to be growing up with Caleb Williams. That's good too. I think that they are going to be very live to be this kind of generation's Devontae Adams, Aaron Rodgers pairing, I think is there. But Odunze a little more of a deep ball game. I don't know. It's a great landing spot for Odunze. Not mad about the shares. I have them. Do you think he'll come down in ADP a little bit, though? Or at least, like, there's going to be some movement with Moore, Allen. Maybe those guys come down. Odunze comes up a little. But I am happy to have Odunze, and I think Caleb Williams will be happy to have him, too. So that's my pick there. Falcons' top three trash organizations, owner clueless. Remember when they were going to get Deshaun Watson before Cleveland stepped up and showed, yeah. And they also didn't take Lamar when he was available and frankly seemed like he was wanting to go to the Falcons potentially. So you have big scripts by Atlanta, and it sucks because like I do believe that offense is going to, with this team botching things incredibly, they're going to fail upwards because you have Kirk Cousins, you have Drake London, you have Kyle Pitts, you have a good play caller coming in Zach Robinson with those Rams principles. Head coach Raheem Morris, a lot of great reviews from on the Rams. Wasn't exactly wowed the last time he was a head coach, but that was years ago. So we'll see with the Falcons. I still think they're the Detroit of this year, where they are the chalk assumption that they're going to take a leap. And I'm okay with the chalk assumption, but when you have the organization making fuck-ups on this level, maybe you start to poke some holes in that a little bit more. JJ McCarthy got probably a much better landing spot. Relative to ADP, he got the best landing spot of any QB in a draft right now. So for JJ McCarthy going to Minnesota, where he's going to have Kevin O'Connell getting the best out of him. And McCarthy, as we talked about, he was a good QB in everything I look at. Last year, some of the metrics that stand out. Again, we talked about the catchable ball rate, 86% catchable ball rate. If you are throwing an 86% catchable ball rate to Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison, and TJ Hockenson, that offense is going to fucking sing. So that is going to be massive for JJ McCarthy. 74% completion rate, 86% catchable ball rate, 73% on target rate. So he's on target with the throws too, which is really important for a guy like Justin Jefferson, where he can break big plays. Addison too. If you're hitting these guys on target, they're catching those balls in stride. They're taking them for touchdowns. This is massive for Minnesota's offense. It's a huge fucking win for Michigan fans, for like JJ McCarthy, though, even though it feels like Michigan fans maybe didn't support him as much as other guys. They're in the bag for Blake Corum. They're not defending JJ. JJ is going to light it up, guys. Like I don't know what else to say that could give you more faith in him, but he and Bo Nix landed nut outcomes for guys that were free in that last draft. And I think they're still going to be mostly free. JJ probably less so, but Bo Nix, I think, is still going to be free to open BBM. You should be stacking them up left and right. If you get Jefferson, if you get Addison, just take JJ. Like JJ is absolutely going to be worth going in the 180s, like 190s maybe. It's like really a perfect fit. I'm so excited for it. I think JJ McCarthy's talented. I've been defending him from January when I first started digging into this stuff and do content around it. But like really, I can't undersell enough, or I can't oversell enough. Like Minnesota is a perfect landing spot for him, where he just doesn't have to do anything. He just has to fucking show up. He just has to clock in and do the job every day and be as good as he was as Michigan, where they didn't ask him to do much. Granted, he's going to get a little bit less effective as that volume increases, the dropbacks increase. But if he could stay within range, he's going to be delivering some really nice shots. He's an athlete too. He can run a little. Love JJ McCarthy, man. Really fucking good landing spot. And no, I don't think so. I don't think so. I mean, we'll see. Obviously, I guess. Adam, though, you hate JJ, so this is probably not a great outcome for you. yeah, here you go. Worst QB gets the best landing spot. Look, I think that he's a lot more talented than Adam seems to think. I guess there's a shot because he is young. Like we talked about with Atlanta, like you can keep him on the bench for a year or two. He's young enough where like he has to accept that and can't be a bitch about it. But if you have Sam Darnold there, it just depends what they do. Like if JJ McCarthy gets injured in camp, Darnold can probably win the job and start the year. But I think McCarthy, what he's going to do in practice with how accurate he is, like this is accuracy, you know, facing really competent teams at Michigan. They're going to see that accuracy. They're going to see the mobility. They're going to be like, we can't keep this guy off the field. It's going to be the same thing that happens with every team. And for his contract window, especially, like they have to pay Jefferson or they have to move on from Jefferson. Like they have a lot of big team organizational things they have to figure out. So you have to have JJ on the field from pretty close to day one to know, is he our guy? Like, are we going to go ahead with him? And I would think that that's what they're going to do. So, too corny for you. Well, you know what? Here's what I care. I don't care about how corny he fucking is. There's a lot of corny QBs out there. I care about them slinging the ball and having great receivers to do it. And he has both those things. So JJ McCarthy to me, like whatever priors you have, I would try really hard to reset him because I think he is going to be an absolute killer. Olufashanu, whatever here. The Jets offensive line here. So they could have gone the Brock Bowers way, apparently opted not to. Tight end, I think, was less of a need for them. It's just keeping Aaron Rodgers safe, allowing him to have some time to deliver balls, hopefully downfield. And it's a net win for Breece Hall, net win for Garrett Wilson to not have a top receiver or Brock Bowers going here. So for the Jets, that's really the main thing I see. Still not in on the Jets. I think they're cruising to be like a 9-8 kind of team, 10-7 kind of team. But, you know, which is okay. Like, that could be enough to prop you up. But I think they're going to win ugly, and that's my belief in the Jets. Having an offensive lineman, though, you know, they're going to win the trenches better. But I think that could go either way. Could make you more effective as a passer. Could make you win ugly, whatever it happens. We're going to talk about Brock in a minute. Bo Nix, I mentioned this in the Squirt Squad VIP channel, which I am trying to for the NFL draft in particular. If I'm seeing something and I think it's going to be an immediate BBM advantage, I'm dropping in that chat something that's not obvious. Like JJ McCarthy, I would hope fairly obvious for you guys, but that's it. So again, hit the join button down below if you want to do that. $4.99 a month. You'll be getting access to the premium Discord there, the Squirt Squad VIP, where I will be dropping these over the weekend. One of the things I did drop, so spoiler alert, Bo Nix landed in the perfect fucking spot. A Sean Payton offense, I said from day one, the moment we did the first video I did previewing rookies, that Bo Nix would be a tremendous fit in Denver. You know why? Because he runs an adult offense that's, you know, maybe a little bit boomery, but like short throws, accuracy-based throws, timing-based throws, getting the ball out, hitting screens. It's all going to happen now in this offense. That's what Denver wants. It's what they hated about Russell Wilson, kept trying to play hero ball. And Russ was okay playing hero ball. Like, he wasn't as bad as people might think, but he didn't run the Sean Payton offense. Bo Nix is going to run the Sean Payton offense. The risk is, I guess, that Zach Wilson could start the year, and then maybe you end up in a situation where, like, you're trying to have Zach Wilson get you through and then you protect Bo Nix and he comes in as a savior. But I think he, much like JJ McCarthy, with the draft capital, with team building in the modern NFL, I think he starts day one. I think he's going to create a lot of value for the pass catchers around him. Again, he was incredibly accurate as well. Let's give a read on his numbers real fast. Bo Nix, 88% catchable ball rate, 77% on target rate. His completion rate, also 77%. So he was throwing catchable balls, and they weren't able to catch them all sometimes, which obviously, you know, that's going to happen for most guys. But, like, was really, like, he should have even had better numbers based on how well he was throwing it. Plus EPA under pressure, that is tremendous. The fact that he gets the ball out quickly when pressure's coming his way, a 0.09 EPA. Being positive EPA under pressure is such a rare trait. That's a pro-level thing that I've said was going to be one of his strengths from day one. Now I think we're going to see it with him starting in the NFL from day one. Plus EPA under 10 air yards, 0.9 EPA, 10 to 20 air yards. Downfield, he's the weakest there, still better than Drake May. 0.7 EPA for Bo Nix compared to a 0.68 for Drake May. So pretty much close, but for what it's worth, JJ McCarthy, 0.64. And then Jaden Daniels, 1.6. Caleb Williams, 1.3. So you see the difference there. The aggressive downfield throwers. That's why, to me, Caleb and Jaden Daniels were a tier above. Drake May, a willing downfield thrower, but not that great at it. He's pretty much as good as Nix, McCarthy, and everybody else I just named. So that's really it for me. Bo Nix, great at everything. I think he is going to be a great player. He was also great in the red zone too, which is a bit of a test of a QB skill because you're getting into tight windows. You're playing kind of carnival ball there. You have to get things into little holes that are probably not meant to be fitting a ball. That's what he did well too. So Bo Nix is a fucking smasher, man. And I hope I put you guys on him enough. I certainly didn't take him enough in drafts just because, like, one of my concerns, and I think this is something I have to be better at, is like, I do it with some players, but then some players that are really fringe where everybody shat on Bo Nix initially, I didn't push him enough in my own drafts. And I think that's something that I have to have more comfort really following my takes with a little bit more aggression. And I'm still above the field on Bo Nix, I'm sure, and definitely above the field on him with Denver, because I did stack that up a couple times. But I do think that it's one thing that I need to be reminded of myself, and I'm going to try to remind myself of more once we get into BBM season. It's just, you got to follow, especially if you do work like we do here on stream every day. And I hope you guys do the same for yourselves. If you do the work and you have takes that you land upon because you're out researching people and you're out dating people and you're putting it together in a way that maybe on a higher level than some folks, you got to trust your gut with some stuff. If you're just going like, hey, I don't know, the Jets weren't good last year, they're not going to be good this year, like, you can't do that. So that's one thing I would say about following your gut. If you're following your gut based upon putting in the work, you got to do it more. And that's something I wish I'd done with Bo Nix a little bit more. Nick slash Wilson and Darnell McCarthy are not good QB rooms, run away. All right. I mean, you're entitled to your opinion. I don't think that's correct. You can't be as efficient as these guys were in college and not be ready to step up to the pros. Like, both guys ran adult offense. Like, that is a skill. More Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels, those guys are like more. Like, those are the kind of guys I like more. They're like playground ball guys. Like, they're guys where, and that's a disrespect to Jaden, who did play a lot within structure and in the system a little bit more, but like, they can create plays out of nothing. Whereas Bo Nix and JJ, especially Bo Nix, like, they're not going to create plays out of nothing. They're going to create plays within structure, within an offense that's well-designed and scheming well. So if you think Sean Payton's just dust and he's never going to be good again, he's not going to be able to figure it out, then you could fade Bo Nix. Like, but there's, what I would say is, like, some QBs are like vessel QBs. They're just a fucking body for the offense to flow through. Whereas other QBs are guys that go out of their way and make plays. And that's the exciting guys. That's the Jaden. That's the Caleb. That's the AR. That's the Stroud. The Bryce Young, though, is like a system guy. So you see what happens when the system is bad. If you think the system is going to be good, you should buy in on the guy. And I think that Bo Nix is going to figure it out well. I think McCarthy is in a very good system that also is going to force him to be more aggressive downfield. So I would say in that respect, McCarthy is a bigger winner. But yeah, that's my take. You can have yours. All right, we got Brock Bowers here at pick 13. So Brock, bit of a surprise here. Again, I think it's viable that the Raiders could be trying to keep two tight end sets a little bit more, trying to use the run game, and also having guys that can catch passes gives them a lot of flexibility, but also still plays conservatively enough. Like, we do know defensive coaches like Antonio Pierce generally would like to play. So for Brock overall, to me, I don't love the landing spot. I don't love it for Michael Mayer, who I have been pretty heavy on in terms of the big board, but I do think there's a world where both guys can get there. The main thing you want to see at this point, you don't want to see the Raiders add another good receiver. Like, obviously, like, Leggett already went, or we'll talk about him in a minute, but Leggett kind of guys I think would be bad to add to the Raiders room right now. Somebody that could command targets, that's going to come in with freak athletic profile, that could also necessitate more three wide receiver sets, that would be bad for Brock Bowers. But Brock Bowers and Mayer, to be clear, I think Bowers is going to be safe no matter what, because no matter what, Brock Bowers is a current regime pick, whereas Michael Mayer is now a previous regime pick. So Mayer, I don't think is dead, but that's the bad side for Mayer. I don't think there's a bad side for Bowers. The bad side for Bowers is just that he's going to be competing with Davante Adams, who will take some red zone attention away in a way that's going to help Bowers out. And frankly, you know, Myers too was fed the ball pretty well last year. So that's the big concern, really. But I think Bowers displaces Mayer in a worst case scenario. Best case scenario is they're both still playing a lot of routes. They're out there and they're kind of like two Dalton Kincaids instead of a Dalton Kincaid and a Dawson Knox. And that's my hope for them. Nix and JJ are guys you win with. Caleb and Daniels are guys you win because of. That's it. I mean, I think Adam summed that up really well. That's exactly how I feel about it. But yes, they can help you win. And I think that's really the main thing to me. And for fantasy, again, it's just, can he be a functional enough vessel in an offense that's going to throw enough for me? I think McCarthy, that's a 100% home run. For Nix, I'm willing to make the bet because there's talent around him and he's so going to be so cheap. But I think, like, if you're going to really nickel and dime, I'm like, there's a shot that Denver's offense just sucks and Sean Payton doesn't have it anymore. So that's the risk profile for Nix. But I don't think it's Nix himself. All right, so Bowers, yeah. So Bowers, I still am a fan of. If he comes down in ADP, I'll keep taking him. Bowers, one of my highest exposed players on the big board. I don't hate it. I just don't think that. I think this is more of a reflection on what Tom Telesco thinks potentially about Michael Mayer. But you also can make the case that, like, this could really be them trying to build a unique approach as a team where you now have two really good blocking tight ends who also can be good at pass catchers. And I think that's an exciting way to approach things, to keep things open while still within the fundamental, like, we're going to run the ball, we're going to be a power team. So I don't think it's dead by any stretch for either guy. Where do I see Jatavion Sanders going? I don't think anywhere good. I mean, if he's going to go somewhere, it's probably third round, I would guess. I honestly don't even want to pick second round tight ends at this point, but Sinnott, I would think it's a better spot or a higher draft capital spot. But maybe not. I don't know. Both guys, though, I think to me, hopefully they're hoping they go today, but I think it's more likely they're going round three. All right, if not later, especially for Jatavion. I think Sinnott round three would be the floor. Jatavion could go round four or five, and it really wouldn't shock me too much. Saints committing to the run here slash protection with Fuaga. Latu goes to more defensive stuff for the Colts. Colts really, I think overall, would love to be a team that wins a little bit more with defense, doesn't put the pressure on AR to win games, so nothing surprising there. Byron Murphy going to Seattle here. Obviously, Mike McDonald, defensive coordinator, taking over as the head coach there. So for him, going to be a thing where you're trying to make the defense better. They have enough on offense for Ryan Grubbs. They're going to see what he can do, setting up some University of Washington principles for that team, as they probably didn't feel like they needed talent, and they've spent enough draft capital receiver in the last few years. Dallas Turner goes to the edge defense, whatever, you know, they need some players on defense for the Vikings. Vikings have lost enough guys. Brian Flores is nobody at his disposal. Now he gets one guy to help him out. Obviously, we're not spending a lot of time on the non-fantasy player positions. Marius Mims, more protection here for the Bengals. Trying to keep Joe Burrow safe and upright can be an important part. Obviously, again, same thing as the Jets. Net win is going to be for the running back room. Also going to help out the QB. Should create more value, more opportunity downfield if Mims is going to be good. 6'8", 3 offensive lineman, man. How do you even buy clothes? Like, is everything just custom tailored? But anyway, just more protection going to be positive for the offense overall, even if it doesn't directly impact anything. Jared Verse here. People wanted to see Xavier Worthy go into the Rams. I thought there was a lot of smoke there that seemed like it could be the case. But frankly, the Rams need to do something on defense. Losing Aaron Donald, that defense already sucked last year with Aaron Donald still being as good as ever. It's getting worse now with Aaron Donald gone. I don't think Jared Verse helps save that in any way. Not that I know much about Jared Verse besides the fact that he is an edge rusher. But he's just really them trying to put a Band-Aid on a bullet hole is what Jared Verse is for the Rams. Mims is a freak, needs to be more consistent, but is a freak. Well, yeah, anybody who's going to be going to Georgia, I'm sure, is going to be a freak. And, of course, our guy Adam knows Georgia as well as anybody. God, 6'8", didn't realize he was that freaking tall. Yeah, I mean, offensive linemen are enormous men. That's why it's hard sometimes to be like a Bryce Young, because you just can't see over the pile of man. Troy Fontenot, people like him, reports were that Caleb maybe wanted them to take him as a guy who, like, it was either him or Olu. I think he said that Fontenot, though, would, like, die for him was like the gist of the quote. Fontenot, though, another pass protector here for a Steelers team that we know does want to set up the run. He's a guard, so guard's going to be more relevant to the run game there. But Fontenot, fine player, goes to the Steelers. We know what the Steelers want to do. Chop Robinson, edge rusher, goes to Miami. Why am I even opening this? Miami's defense is ass. Got worse by losing Christian Wilkins, so we'll see. Same thing as the Aaron Donald thing. Trying to prop up a defense that's already ass. I don't think it does a whole lot for them, but maybe makes them slightly worse, or slightly better, rather. Quinyon Mitchell, cornerback for the Eagles. Eagles really didn't have any offensive needs, no surprise. Brian Thomas, I hate this. I hate that he's going to Jacksonville. I hate Trevor Lawrence. I hate the team. I hate Doug Peterson. I think that he's a coach that loses effectiveness every year. I think we've seen that starting to go that way last year. We'll see if they can get out of the tailspin, but frankly, the other AFC South teams, I think, are more interesting right now. Brian Thomas, got to assume Zay Jones is going to be a cut candidate. If not, Brian Thomas now is the leap too, guys. He is a better version of Gabe Davis. He is a better player than Zay Jones, a more explosive player, but you also have Christian Kirk taking targets away. You have Evan Ingram taking targets away. Brian Thomas himself doesn't earn a lot of targets. He only had a 23% target route run rate while competing with Malik Nabers. So I think the Kirk slash Ingram pull of that is going to keep Thomas probably around that same 20 to 22% target route run rate. So Thomas, to me, not a nut outcome for him. I don't know that he comes down in ADP. I'll still take some shots at him. It's probably going to force me to take more Trevor Lawrence, which I guess I should do to hedge against my own biases, but I hate the fit. I really think that he could have been somewhere else and been a lot better. The hope is that, though, like, he just supplants Gabe Davis. They just gave Gabe so much money, and they trust Zay Jones a lot. So I wouldn't even be surprised if they don't cut Zay, but I think that that'd be the most likely assumption. They cut Zay. Brian Thomas at least has a pathway to getting on the field, but there's a lot of mouths to feed in that offense. So Trevor Lawrence is, to me, really, really regressed in this past year. So that's my concern. Bummer. Love Brian Thomas, but that's it. Thomas picked, kept our Kirk Ingram bags happy. It did. I don't have Kirk Ingram bags though, so I'm not there. Think Jags are bottom of the division. Agreed. I think it's going to be a competitive division. I don't know if they're necessarily going to finish last, but I just don't think like last year, the assumption would have been, oh, they're coming in and they're going to win the South easily. And of course they don't. Now I think they're at risk of being last, I would say, but it's going to be a dogfight for everybody, I think, besides Houston, would be my guess. Better version of DJ Chark. Oh, I hate to hear that. Yeah, that's probably not a bad analysis, though. It's just like he needed to go somewhere that was going to force him for Brian Thomas. He needed to go somewhere that was going to force him to grow and force him to be a better player. Now he's going to somewhere where he can just be very comfortable just catching a few deep balls here and there. I just don't love the outcome for him. I really would have liked to see him be somewhere where he's forced to grow the route tree, Buffalo, forced to grow into a role that he's not ready for. Like, that's where you want to see a young guy as a freak athlete. And I just don't think this one is going to be it for him. But he's going to get those Calvin Ridley balls, so that's a positive. But, you know, it's just – and he'll be better with him than Ridley was, I think. So, some hope, but not enough. Let's see. All right. Got Terry and Arnold going to the Lions here. Thought Lions were live to take one more receiver, as I did have a mocked in the last video we did. Had them taking Brian Thomas a little bit later in the draft. For Terry and Arnold, though, I think the main thing for him is that he is going to shore up a defense that needs to be improved. They can't put all the onus on the offense, especially the way that they lost the playoffs last year. So making cornerback better for Detroit. Again, never great to see a defense get better for fantasy, but kind of a natural push-pull that has to go on. Packers get an offensive tackle to protect Jordan Love. Not a surprise. You have all the weapons at receiver. You added Josh Jacobs at running back. You maybe add another running back in this draft as well. Ray Davis, I think, very live to go to Green Bay. So offensive tackle going there. Nothing crazy. Center for Tampa Bay. Again, protection. You have your receivers. You have your running back for right now. We'll see what they do a little bit later on. Nothing surprising there. Teams that are well-built already, you take defensive linemen, you take cornerbacks, you take offensive linemen. That's what they're going to do. Edge rusher for Arizona. Again, Arizona taking a defensive player, not a shock at all. Arizona, of course, being coached by a defensive head coach. They've got enough on offense for right now. Would not rule out them taking one more receiver in the next 2 to 3 rounds. There's going to be enough bodies there that could add one more guy to take pressure off of Harrison. But for right now, obviously the defense needs a lot of work. All right, Xavier Worthy here, one we actually have to talk about. So to me, people are going to go nuts for this landing spot. This is now getting to be a little bit of a crowded wide receiver room, and Xavier Worthy, so if you're a Rashee Rice fan, you're facing a really bad situation here, where Worthy was not a deep ball target for Texas. What he was used to be a fast guy who ran a lot of rub routes and stuff at Texas, a lot of short routes as well at Texas. So he could be faster Rashee Rice, and he's going to be an infinitely better athlete than Rashee Rice. So if he could do what Rashee Rice did last year, he's not because of a target earner. Rashee Rice earned about 35% target per out run in college compared to, I think, 27% for Worthy this past year. So, like, Rashee Rice is the better target earner overall. But for Worthy, I think what you're getting with him is, like, he's just going to be a better athlete, and they're going to find a way to use him. And he is going to be a guy that if Rashee Rice is out those first 4 games, you are now in real danger. But with them taking Worthy, with them adding Marquise Brown, with them talking up Kadarius Toney again for one more run, with Rashee Rice being there, with Travis Kelce still being there to take a certain amount off the plate, and we'll see what else they do. I think they're not dead to add another outside receiver here because Worthy's probably going to play a little bit more out of the slot, you know, play more intermediate game. So I don't think it's great. I don't think it's great for a Chiefs team that they're reloading. They're getting better versions, like Marquise Brown, the better version of MVS. Xavier Worthy, the better version of Justin Watson. Like, they're getting better overall, but they're not going to, I think, be a team that's going to throw for 300, 400 yards a game anymore. I just don't see how you want to win like that when they showed a real will last year to change the narrative and win in a different way. So I think Worthy's a fine player. I think the price tag for him is going to get real lofty. If I had to guess, he's going to go at least 70s, more likely 50s, 60s, based on the public enthusiasm for anybody being added to a top team. So Worthy, he's okay. If you got him in the 90s, 100s, probably feel okay with it. But I think he is now very fast Sky Moore, is how I feel about him. I think he's going to be really overvalued. And I'm not sure if I'll be there quite as much. I wasn't there as much in the big board. And I don't know. I'm not mad at that. So glad I have 0% Rice. You guys know my stance on Rice was that they were going to add somebody. That was before all the legal issues now, but that was why I didn't think he was worth taking in the 20s. I took him sporadically at best, and I think that bet looks like one of my best takes so far of this early part of the season. And you are telling me not to draft Sky Moore. I'm telling you not to draft very fast Sky Moore. You could draft him. I just be aware, like, it's a real premium for an offense that I don't think wants to throw to a lot of guys. But Xavier Worthy fucks it up for everybody. He fucks it up for Brown. Brown's been going too high with Worthy being added. Rashee Rice, he can steal Rashee Rice's role. He's been going too high. Kelce should probably stay where he is, but everybody's fucked. Tyler Guyton, offensive lineman for Dallas. You know what they have to do. They lost Smith. They had to improve the offensive line there. Still want to run the ball pretty effectively, even though probably not going to be as effective this year overall. Had to add offensive line, though, so no surprise there. Still alive to take a running back the next couple rounds. Nate Wiggins, Ravens taking a cornerback. That's Ravens football for you. Ricky Pearsall, what does this mean? So he basically mostly a slot guy in college, so you would expect him to move into the slot more. Brandon Ayuk has moved to the slot deep, but like they're going to move him around, but he's going to be most effective playing out of the slot. I do think that he's not on the field as often as people are going to want to see, especially with how likely he's going to be drafted in the, what, 110s, 100s. I might be short selling that a little bit. Pearsall is going to be a very popular pick. I think he has some merits, as I've talked about a lot. I thought that AR made him the year before last. A lot of his highlights are just AR making brilliant plays. This past year, though, the QB play got a lot worse. He still kept making brilliant plays. So for him, though, not a big target earner, playing in an offense now where unless they trade Debo, unless they trade Brandon Ayuk, I don't see how a guy who in college this past year, where there was nobody else really at wide receiver to compete, 23.6% target per out run rate, a really good 0.47 EPA. My guess is he's going to be very efficient, but not going to be a good target earner. So if he's going to get steamed up to the moon, unless I am desperate to tack on part of a Niner stack, I don't think he's a pick for me. I get the enthusiasm. I saw the chat was really stoked and all that. I think that for Pearsall, it's a good landing spot, but he needs a trade. He needs one of those guys to move, and it's possible that happens. And if that happens, fine, buy the Rays. But he was not a good enough target earner to compete with Brandon Ayuk, who is one of the best target earners in the league, and Debo, who gets deliberately schemed targets and touches as much as anybody in the league. That's not where you want Ricky Pearsall to be, I think. Again, much like Brian Thomas, you want him to be somewhere where he's going to have to grow. So if they trade Ayuk, he's going to have to grow. If they don't trade, if they trade Debo, he's going to have to grow. If they trade neither, he's just going to be a guy out there running wind sprints a lot. So that's how I feel about it. Pearsall's a bad pick, too many mouths. I don't want to say a bad pick. It's a good team, but I think closer to a bad pick in fantasy if he's going to go really high. And Pearsall the nuts landing spot, but he needs Ayuk. Yeah, so that's the thing is he needs Ayuk to go, which is a big ask. And they've not made progress on the contract yet for Ayuk. But like if Ayuk is there, there's just nothing for him. There's just really, if Ayuk and Debo are both there, because it's possible they trade Debo and extend Ayuk. But really just, it's not enough. It's not enough for him to make a stride and to be worth the ADP is going to be. Somehow Luckbox team I drafted months ago that had Caleb Williams, Moore, Allen, Odunze, and Komet. Oh, there you go. There you go. It's pretty nice. Full Chicago stack. I don't hate it. The trade Debo or Ayuk, I'll be loading up on Kittle. Yeah, look, I would take Pearsall. I would take Kittle. I would take, honestly, I'd take some shots at Juwan Jennings. So I get it. Xavier Leggett gets the spot that I wanted for somebody good. A little bit surprised they went his way over a Troy Franklin or a Ladd or some other guys. But Leggett, as we talked about, I've thought from day one that Leggett looks like A.J. Brown. RAS testing wise, Leggett actually bested A.J. Brown across the board, had a much better score. Does that matter necessarily in terms of the player? No. But Leggett going into a target tree that's going to be pretty open. Deontay Johnson played well last year. But target earning for him is always going to be something that can be a little bit evasive. And for him, too, he is getting a little bit older. But I think Deontay there doesn't really matter that much. Thielen there doesn't really matter that much. You're just giving some more weapons to Bryce Young. But really, Leggett in this offense, he's the one primed to make a big leap. If I were going to draft people for Dynasty, I think Leggett, to me, should be above. Ooh, I don't know. Should he be above Pearsall? I think he should be above Pearsall. I think he should be above Brian Thomas right now. Because like the Carolina target tree is open. And frankly, Bryce Young needs a guy like Leggett who can not only just get some shorter targets, some, you know, sticks level targets, but can get down the field a little bit more. Deontay Johnson did that a little bit in Pittsburgh last year. Wasn't a strength though, like definitely more of a pick and strength. Leggett has the ability to do both. So Leggett, I would expect to be more effective playing out of the slot. Let me just pull up Leggett's numbers really fast to make sure I'm talking accurately about this. Leggett overall, pretty good target earner, could be better. 28% target per out run rate. 0.52 EPA per target is very good for him. Out wide, he had a 0.32 EPA. At the slot, a 0.76 EPA. So a little bit of like a CeeDee Lamb-y kind of split there too. AJ Brown is the same thing too. That's much better playing out of the slot. But Leggett probably going to be forced out wide because I don't see Thielen being able to play anywhere besides the slot. Or Leggett has to displace Thielen. So maybe that's the tough part is you could see some two wide receiver sets where you don't get Leggett out there as much. Though if we're going to have Canales' offense in, you know, Dave Canales, of course, the head coach of the Panthers now, who I have a lot of faith in terms of a play caller with what he did with the Bucs last year. I feel like last year they didn't run a lot of three wide receivers. They ran Godwin playing out of the slot with Evans playing out wide. So you run the risk of Leggett maybe not being there in enough two wide receiver sets. Because he could be the guy squeezed out of the second out wide spot. But if they cut Thielen, they could cut Thielen, I guess. I don't know how likely that is. If they cut Thielen, or it seems like you're getting July reports that Leggett's moving ahead of Thielen, I would really start to heavy up. But I think for him, he's going to be better out of the slot. He can play out wide. Kind of a Ladd McConkey thing. I think there's a lot of guys in this class that fit that criteria. Any chance Bryce Young grows 3 inches? No, probably not. But it doesn't matter. It's really the play calling for him. He had bad play calling last year that asked him to do too much. I am very confident Dave Canales is going to figure out a way to make him work for that team and make the team work for him. So that's one of my big bets here. Just cut a 1,000-yard receiver who got there through volume and nobody else being there. It's not like he added a ton of value of his own play. But you know, I don't think they're going to cut him. But like, if you have a young guy and you know Thielen, you know the ceiling for Thielen already. It's not like the Panthers are going to win the South this year, so they might think they can, but like I would see what Leggett has personally, but that's me being somebody that cares more about the future and getting the more exciting prospect on the field. It's not necessarily how football teams think. How do you feel about the trade up to get the 50-year option, Savvy, or pointless? I think kind of pointless, but I get, you know, teams want control. It's like the same thing in MLB too, where they try to keep the guys in the minors longer, so team control is a thing. I get why they would do it, but ultimately it's probably a net break even, just because the fact you're paying him a little bit more money for that then, and you're, you know, whatever, but it doesn't worry me that much. Coming in late, really hoping that Nick/Sutton stack is what you need. It's possible, definitely possible. So there we go. This is round one. So what are my round two takes here? What do I want to see? So actually, can we pull up a round two pick board? Cause Buffalo, right, has pick number. Here's round two. Buffalo right now is pick 33 after moving down. I would love to see Buffalo immediately take Troy Franklin, because the two teams that have seen Troy Franklin the most are Buffalo and New England. And they're both right here in the second round. So number one, this could be a tremendous start to round two for me as if Troy Franklin goes there. So I want to see that. Frankly, if Troy Franklin goes to New England, I wouldn't hate that. Him and Drake May would be a pretty good combo. So really those two would be good. Maybe less good to be Troy Franklin to Washington, but I want one of these nice spots for Troy Franklin as my big hope for day two. Besides that, in day two, who else do I really have to cape for at this point? Adonai Mitchell has obviously got to go somewhere. I think he's live to go to Washington too. He would be homeless Terry McLaurin in that offense, less good target earner, but similar deep ball guy. I think that would not shock me to see AD Mitchell go there. And frankly, if AD Mitchell goes to Washington with Jaden Daniels, I think it would be a pretty good outcome for him. So I'd watch that one for AD Mitchell to go in these first 10 picks around two. estimated the Bills would not happen to start around two. I would rather have Troy Franklin to the Bills in round two, and estimate can go around four, round five. You can go wherever. We're just going to hope that he becomes the new Latavius Murray there. Nobody else here. I feel like I really need to make a stand for Brendan Rice here. See where he goes. I'm not sure if that's going to be round two or three, but I think there's a pretty good shot. Keon Coleman, I want to see keep falling. Definitely would like to have that one in the bag as well. QB wise, I think we've seen everything. I'm sure Spencer Rattler fans would like to see him go. I think that Spencer Rattler should go after Jordan Travis, and they should both go in the 4-5 round. But that's really not neither here nor there take. Running backs, if I had to guess, I think we see Trey Benson or Jonathan Brooks go this round. I think the teams are going to get a little impatient with waiting on running backs. So that'd be one of my guesses. Maybe honestly, Texans could be live here, take a running back at this point. If not, Texans, Bucky Irving becomes more of a realistic option later in rounds, but that's it. Arizona, another wide receiver. If I had to guess, I think they go defense, but they're going to take another receiver in the draft. I don't know if they take it in round two. I would imagine at the top of round two, you're probably going to get your pick of some pretty good defensive players, or knowing them, they might want to trade back and get some draft capital, but I think when you have Harrison, you add like a secondary piece at some point, but you don't need to add it too early on unless you really want to go for the gusto, but I think they're going to care about the defense more. Brooks to Giants. Be bad for Devin Singletary, but it's possible. All right, guys, so there you go. So that's all my thoughts on round one. I hope you guys enjoyed this. Hope it made some sense. Again, please do subscribe down below. Draft starting again on Monday to Friday at 11 a.m. BBM kicking off then. And I will be here bright and early doing drafts every day here. And of course, bringing the same information, talking about the news, talking about the data, as you guys saw me do here. And Appreciate all the people watching this one. I feel like that's a lot of viewers here for watching me just give some takes. So shout out to all you guys. Appreciate you, though, even more. Hit that like button and subscribe. Of course, if you're new to Underdog, play on there as well. Promo code SPLASH will match your deposit 100%. Go check it out. Promo code SPLASH on there. Link in the description as well. And actually, I put it up top now. I put draft with Spags. A great irony that I never want anybody to draft with me. But now that's the call to action here that I'm blatantly, I will admit, stealing from Fantasy Flock. I noticed he does that. He converts for Underdog better than anybody. So now we're going to try and be good Underdog soldiers. Probably my baby. Want to get better at sports betting? Want to build your bankroll for best ball? Get into sports betting, especially if you're in a legal state right now and use Probably's data. It'll change your life. Home run bets hitting at a great clip in MLB right now. It's been a real big mana from heaven the last few days. But MLB, fucking nobody watches the videos. So everybody wants to do NBA betting. Either way, though, it doesn't matter what sport. We use the same process using the top sportsbooks around the world to find the true probability, then price legal U.S. bets, and do it automatically throughout the day. So check it out for yourself. Probably.com/subscribe, promo code SPLASH, save 50%, or check the pinned comment where there is a 7-day free trial of Probably going as well. Stochastic, if you play DFS, use promo code SPLASH on there, 15% off. Now the reading of names, guys. It's Friday. Gave it an update, so here we go. Whew. All right. Is there anything I could do voice-wise to make this fun for myself? No. All right. Reading your names. All these people have paid a membership here, $4.99 a month, hit the join button. You too can be a part of supporting the Squirt Squad here and also get the premium Spags rings coming out. I was working on some blurbs last night, in fact, because I'm excited to write about some guys. So that's going to be coming out, I would say, at the end of next week will be when the Spags rankings come out, including exportable rankings for BBM that I still have to code out. That's going to be a thing that you can use too. And if you want to merge them with other rankings, you can do that. I don't know. Follow your heart. Anyway, thank you, Squirt Squad, including Robert Griffin the Turd, Historical Anomalies, Matthew Emerson, Tyler, CLN, Mathology, Rupesh, Willis, Ivan Black, It's Just Port, Mark, a.k.a. Io, a.k.a. Tony Mark, Rob Van Natten, Brandon Wagner, Consigliere, Aaron D., Nez, Jake Twitchell, fucking Alpha, Mr. I Am the KY, Kevin Castro, Lateralis, Lunchable Connoisseur, Short Gamer, the King of MLB DFS, Carlos Manzo, Felix Castro, Chunk the Deuce, Spurious News, Gabe Davis, poor Gabe Davis. He's going to be so upset to hear about this Brian Thomas news. Bindles, Frankie Frank, Nolan, Thomas Schultz, Laces Out, Mr. TD, Jay Stress, Kent Lewis, Kyler, Jonathan W., Jay, Jaden, Galen Stars, Christopher, Jeff T., Wounded Geese, Ben Haver, Jeff F., Craig B., Recipes with Reed, Body Bag Jones, Hoosier Devo, Jason Neff, our boy Michael Thomas is unbanned. Welcome back, Michael Thomas. You paid for a month and now you've paid your penance. Steel City Blue, Thomas Avery, W for Omega, Finkelstein, Shit Kid, Tyler, Mike, Sip, D Will, Christopher Ford, the Snatch Catcher himself, and the Hot Rodder 12. All these fine folks help me put on the show. You too can do it. Hit that join button down below. And of course, if you're gambling, always make sure to do it responsibly, guys. That's what I'd say, or I'll bonk you. I'll bonk you like the dog. Follow me at Chris Spags. Follow the show at SplashPlayPod. And again, please do subscribe down below. We'll be back with more on Monday. And honestly, if BBM is somehow out tomorrow morning, or maybe tomorrow morning, so we'll see. Keep your eyes peeled. Hit the notification bell. You'll know when I do. But I'll see you guys then. Enjoy your weekends, ladies and gentlemen. Go Troy Franklin, go. And of course, good luck. Bye.